basic question is about how we should conceptually underpin Dirac quantization and try and examine the connection between Dirac quantization and a different approach, which we call kind of geometric or reductive quantization, and examining the two together, looking at some issues about the canonical form of GR. So in constrained Hamiltonian theory, the local symmetry transformations are represented in terms of the action of first-class constraints on the physical phase space. And one approach to quantizing these constraint systems is the geometric quantization procedure, whereby we first reduce out the action of the constraints at a classical level, and then quantize the reduced space which results. And then another methodology, which is often more practicable, is the Dirac procedure, where we first quantize an extended phase space and then impose a constraint at a quantum level. And when these two procedures hold, there's a sense in which quantization and reduction commute as procedures. And in that case, I'm going to be saying that the desired quantization of the true classical degrees of freedom seems to be assured, and the kind of conceptual foundations of the Dirac approach seem reasonably solid. In canonical generativity, where the Hamiltonian function is itself a constraint, on the other hand, commutation between reduction and quantization, if we can actually show, which no one's come close to as yet, would actually be a good reason for doubting the conceptual foundations of Dirac quantized GR, in particular the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. However, if we don't have this connection that we can fall back on, the kind of correlation between the reduction and the Dirac quantization procedure, then it seems like we've got an issue about what exactly the quantum Hamiltonian constraint, which is literally the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, if it isn't equivalent to this problematic reduction, then what does it mean in terms of classical symmetry? So that's the kind of end. A fair bit of technical stuff, which I'll try and go through as quickly as possible to get there and try and explain exactly what I mean by that. So if we take a normal theory of no gauge symmetries whatsoever, we can represent it geometrically in terms of its phase space, at least, in terms of a symplectic geometry. Or we've got this is the phase space, and this is a symplectic two-form, which equips it with the geometry. And the dynamics in these terms is going to be characterized by the geometric form of Hamilton's equations, which is basically this equation here, which is where the unknown symplectic two-form we have, H is a Hamiltonian function, and it's the unknown is the Hamiltonian vector field. And the integral curves of this vector field are going to be the dynamical trajectories, the phase-space solutions. And in these kind of non-gauge theories, we've got a one-to-one representational correspondence between points in the phase space and solutions in the phase space. Between them, on the one hand, and instantaneous states and histories in the physical system which we're trying to describe. So a nice, simple example here, where this is a phase space. The red arrows are the vector field, which you get from the equation I just wrote up. And then the blue lines are the integral curves. So this is for a simple pendulum, and you get out the solutions of a pendulum. So it's just a way of rewriting Hamilton's equations geometrically. Now, for a gauge theory, the physical phase space, where a point represents a state, doesn't provide a straightforward representation. It's a submanifold within the extended phase space, which is just the cotangent bundle of the configuration space. And it's defined by satisfaction of the constraint functions, which are these phi here. The geometry of this is actually presymplectic, which means it's got a kind of degeneracy to it, which symplectic geometry doesn't have. And the degeneracy is in terms of these null directions, which are actually defined by the constraints. And the Hamiltonian function is no longer going to give us a unique vector field as we had for this situation here. It's actually going to give us multiple possible paths. So we've now got a many-to-one representational relationship between the
points and the solutions in our physical phase space on the one hand, and the states and histories in the thing we're trying to describe on the other. And we can see that as problematic. What we can do, though, is take points connected by the integral curves of the null vector fields, and we classify them as gauge orbits, which I'm writing as x in square brackets. And then each point on the gauge orbit is understood as representing the same physical state. So we're kind of taking the whole of the degeneracy. And then we construct a quotient space by considering the space of gauge orbits. And if all goes well, which it hopefully usually does, this will be a symplectic space with a symplectic two-form and a well-defined Hamiltonian function. And we can define a unique representation of both the physical states and the dynamics. And kind of graphically, it was represented here, where so this is the extended phase space. This is the physical phase space defined by the constraints. This is the gauge orbit. And then our reduction is calling points on the gauge orbit one point. And this is our reduced phase space, which, if all goes well, has the right kind of geometry, and we can get a one-to-one representation relationship between our dynamics and our formalism. Okay, so Dirac, who's actually author of this, as well as the quantization procedure we're going to be talking about, roughly, presumes that the first-class constraints, which are those that commute all the others, generate infinitesimal transformations that don't change the physical state. And if this presumption is accepted, then the reduced phase space, which we've just defined, where the action of the constraints has been removed, should faithfully parameterize the true degrees of freedom in our theory. And treating this reduced phase space as our fundamental kind of dynamical arena seems very well justified. However, it's actually, in contrary to popular belief, it's the details of each individual theory which really dictate whether this Dirac presumption should be accepted. And if it shouldn't be accepted, if the constraints actually have a role over and above generating unphysical transformations, then this reduced space might not faithfully parameterize our real dynamics of our system. Okay, so that's a quick overview on the reduction. So geometrically, what we can do when we have a symplectic manifold and together with a set of smooth real functions is quantize this by constructing a Hilbert space and a set of self-adjoint operators on the Hilbert space. And we can define this a full kind of formally quantization of a classical system, which we've got it represented in this symplectic manifold here, as a pairing of the Hilbert space and a one-to-one map, which we're calling O, which takes the classical observables, which are the smooth functions, to self-adjoint operators on the Hilbert space. And when these following conditions are satisfied, we call this quantization. And the condition that I'm really going to focus on, and which to a large extent is a kind of key conceptual backbone of this talk, is that there's a correspondence. Well, for a quantization to be formally rigorous, there's going to be a correspondence between the classical Poisson bracket structure and a quantum commutation bracket structure. And technically, this is a Lie algebra morphism up to a factor, the factor being IH bar. Okay, so to geometrically quantize a gauge theory, or we don't have a symplectic space to start off with, we could first reduce down the presymplectic space to construct a symplectic reduced phase space, and then apply these ideas to quantize that space. So in this value drawn schematic, that's this step here. So we reduce down to the reduced phase space, and then we apply the quantization ideas I've just been talking about to reach this Hilbert space here, which we're calling H bar. And the constraints and the symmetries are incorporated and divided out at the classical level, so they're not represented quantum mechanically at all. And if all goes well, and we have symplectic manifold in our reduced space, then a well-defined Hilbert space structure within a product is guaranteed. Alternatively, we could follow the Dirac route, and particularly when construction of a reduced phase space which is a manifold for one and a symplectic manifold for the other, is difficult, this seems like the best option. And the basic idea is that rather than quantizing this physical phase space, we quantize the kind of extended phase space, which has unphysical degrees of freedom in it. And we can formalize this quantization of this extended space reasonably rigorously in algebraic terms. And again, the step I want to focus on is that fundamentally what we want to do is find the relationship between the Poisson bracket structure in the classical algebra and a commutation structure in the quantum algebra. That's the first stage. But we obviously haven't got a representation of the world yet. We've got all these unphysical degrees and degenerate degrees as well. So the second stage of direct quantization procedure, which is less easily formalized, is to construct a physical Hilbert space by imposing quantum constraints. So when we've constructed our auxiliary Hilbert space out of our extended phase space, we've also constructed a representation of the classical constraints at the quantum level. And the idea is that we impose these constraints upon the admissible physical states, and then from that we can get a physical Hilbert space. So this is this root here. So we quantize the overarching extended space, construct an auxiliary Hilbert space, use the constraints, the quantum operator version of the constraints, restrict physical states, and arrive at a physical Hilbert space. However, the second stage of the Dirac procedure suffers from a number of problems. So there's ambiguity in the ordering, operator ordering. There's no rigorous procedure for defining an inner product structure. We haven't got a guarantee that there will be an inner product. And there's a non-triviality of solving the constraints at the quantum level. And to some extent, we can overcome these difficulties using methods from refined algebraic quantization, which I will not go into. But the extent to which we can overcome them is largely dependent upon the extent to which the constraints are formed by the algebra runs themselves. When they're not, other methodologies are used. The only real methodology for quantizing situation, but for doing the second stage, when the constraints themselves fail to be in the algebra, is this master constraint program, which again I won't be talking about. For the purpose of this talk, we're going to make a very, very non-trivial assumption that these problems have been solved, and that this space here, reached by the Dirac methodology, is a well-defined Hilbert space with observables and everything has worked out. So I'm going to assume that step's been solved and look at the conceptual side of things rather than the formal side. So we've got two methods of quantization. An immediate question is for gauge systems, right? An immediate question is whether they're equivalent. Whether, if we take either route, we end up with the same Hilbert space, or unitarily isomorphic Hilbert spaces at least. And strictly to properly understand this question, or probably attempt to solve this question, we're going to have to look at the kind of formalization issue of exactly how the physical Hilbert space is being constructed. But again, that's not all we're going to focus on here. What we're really going to worry about is this idea of them being representationally equivalent. So more precisely, should we think of the classical projection from the physical phase space to the reduced phase space as analogous to this quantum reduction from the auxiliary Hilbert space to the physical Hilbert space? Are they equivalent in terms of eliminating the same or choice representational structure and isolating the same degrees of freedom? And this is important. Even if they're mathematically slightly different, we want them to represent the world in the same way, otherwise there's something going wrong with our quantization in general. So on one level, there's a clear equivalence. Whereas classically, the symplectic reduction procedure, it's going to take us from a representation of physical states in terms of an equivalence class to one that's unique. The Dirac procedure, on the other hand, is going to take us from an unphysical and a choice representation to one which is both unique and physical. So it's somehow both the step of removing the unphysical states and removing the degeneracy, which is two steps here, restricting into the physical phase space and quotienting down to the reduced phase space, is somehow achieved in one go here. And that means we shouldn't think of this auxiliary Hilbert space as similar to this physical phase space. In particular, we can see the constraints as defining equivalence classes in this space of physical states, whereas the constraints that we can represent in this space won't take us between physically miscible states. So there's a quite fundamental difference. But if the classical constraints form a Lie algebra, we can identify the quantum constraints with self-adjoint operators. So, for the case that the phi I that we've used to define this straight manifold here, which exists here, when they close with structure constants, we can represent them in terms of unitary operators on the auxiliary Hilbert space. And we can then understand these operators as defining a unitary representation of the canonical gauge group. And this means we can define a precise connection between the classical and quantum quotienting procedures in group theoretic terms. And this seems, to me at least, to confer representational equivalence on the physical Hilbert space and the quantized... So it means, I think if we can understand these phi i's generating a symmetry group, and we can understand their unitary representation on the auxiliary Hilbert space as in terms of a group as well, and the two groups are isomorphic, the idea that we've removed this degeneracy here going to here, and we've removed the same degeneracy here into here, seems to me that there's some kind of representational connection between them that works. However, when the classical contrary algebra fails to be a Lie algebra, or fails to be an algebra, in fact, this group theoretic basis isn't really there anymore. We're still going to hope that these two are at least representationally equivalent, but when we haven't got a strong group theoretic interpretation of the constraints that are quantum mechanical level, it's quite difficult to see how we can establish that. So, quite quick. The ADM formalism of GR can kind of construct based upon a Einstein-Hilbert action, and it's fundamentally all about sigma, which is a three-dimensional manifold of arbitrary topology, and our canonical variables, which are three-dimensional. The QAB and PAB. And I'll go through this reasonably quickly. And once we have this Lagrangian here, we can define constraint, or we get constraint functions called the Mendenhall-Hamiltonian constraints, which are the same constraint function that Sean was talking about this morning. And the physical phase space of GR is a submanifold within the extended phase space, which quantized by these position momentum variables. And it takes a very similar form to that which we've talked about generically in gauge theory. And like in normal gauge theory, you can understand it in terms of a presymplectic geometry. Now, the need for imposing these constraints on a classical basis is quite easily understood, since we know the physical modes of the classical gravitational field should correspond to, in a canonical representation, 4 times infinity cubed degrees of freedom. And the imposing constraints serves to cut down from 12 to 8. But it still needs another 4 on physical degrees of freedom on the physical phase space. So how exactly we eliminate this remaining four kind of or choice degrees of freedom from our eight is one of the hardest, not the hardest problem, kind of interfering with us dealing with canonical gravity using standard gauge theoretic methods. Like, naively, we could just press ahead and try and reduce out the excess degrees by just applying some plenty reduction. But if we do that, we run into problems, since I won't go through this in too much detail. But effectively, what we get in the case of canonical GR is that what we'd normally call the gauge orbits are actually isomorphic to solutions of the Einstein field equations. So that if we just collapse down the gauge orbits into points, in some ways we've lost our dynamics. So a kind of philosophical move that some people, particularly Belloc, have used in this situation is to try and reinterpret this space as a space of histories rather than of a true reduced space in a normal sense. But I think this is slightly dubious because it means that if we start calling these points histories, our understanding of what points in the physical phase space actually represent seems a little difficult, because we should really call them equivalence classes of histories, which they clearly are. Even more explicitly, this kind of dynamical side to the Hamiltonian constraint in GR can be kind of written out. We take a, this is a calculation by Tierman, if we take an arbitrary momentum variable and actually compute what the Hamiltonian constraint does to it, we find this term is zero on the constraint surface, so we don't have to worry about it. We can understand this in terms of a gauge transformation, but this term here is non-zero on the constraint surface. So to treat the actual Hamiltonian constraint as purely gauge generating would be to actually neglect this term here, which doesn't seem to be consistent. And in fact, we can actually show that the constraints of canonical GR can only really be understood as producing the local symmetry group of GR, four-dimensional diffeomorphisms, once we define a solution which is generated by the Hamiltonian constraint. So passing to the reduced phase space of canonical gravity, where we've removed the actual Hamiltonian constraint, seems to kind of throw the dynamical baby out of the gauge symmetry bathwater. So I think I'm pretty strongly minded that it's not a good thing to do. So if we look at Dirac quantization of GR, we can try and worry about some of these issues more precisely. So following the normal Dirac quantization route, we would pass to our auxiliary Hilbert space as before, and then we want to impose the Hamiltonian momentum constraints as restraints on allowed physical states. And the imposition of these constraints seems well motivated on a physical level, since they seem to remove the degree, to cut the degrees of freedom down to the desired two. However, we need to be sure that we've isolated the correct dynamical degrees that we've eliminated. Sorry, the desired four, it should be. And we can only really make be sure that what we've done in terms of removing excess degrees of freedom is correct if we understand this procedure here in terms of classical symmetry. So with regard to the momentum constraints, we can do this. They form a Lie algebra, and we can understand their quantum operator equivalence as natural extension of their role classically as generators of Poisson algebra homeomorphic to Lie algebra of infinitesimal diffeomorphisms. So that we have one class of constraints where classically we can understand exactly what they're doing, exactly what it means to quotient them out and form superspace, and quantum mechanically we can understand in terms of unitary operators, and we can understand the imposition of them as operators restricting allowed state vectors in terms of doing the same thing quantum mechanically as we did classically. And that seems to motivate us to say, at least with regard to the Hamiltonian, the momentum constraints, these two spaces are at the very least representationally equivalent. But the quantum Hamiltonian constraints, on the other hand, have got no simple group theoretic interpretation. Their classical counterparts close only with structure functions. And assuming, which is a big assumption, that we can at least make a physical Hilbert space by imposing them, we've got no straightforward basis for saying that this physical Hilbert space will be isomorphic, or unitarily isomorphic, to the one we've got by reducing and then quantizing. So we don't really have a very sound basis for saying reduction and quantization do commute or don't commute for the case of the Hamiltonian constraint in GR. So rather than saying me trying to make up an argument one way or the other, let's just see, there's only two possible answers. What does it mean either way? Should we think of the direct quantization of canonical gravity as representation equivalent to a geometric quantization of the reduced phase space of the classical theory? So assuming that we should, it then appears that the only viable interpretation of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is as imposing at a quantum level the diametrically trivializing reduction that we've just, I argued against for GR. So if we think of these two procedures as equivalent, then the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which will take us to this space here, is equivalent to this problematic reduction down to reduced phase space. And in that sense, I'd say it's ill-founded philosophically. But then, assuming that they're not equivalent, then we've got to find out exactly what we're doing when we're imposing the Hamiltonian constraint as a quantum operator. How can we be sure what we're doing in terms of degrees of freedom is correct? And I'm not sure about this. I think perhaps trying to understand the Wheeler-DeWitt equation in terms of gauge fixing of GR might be an option, but I don't know. So I think all I'm doing is trying to point to a difficulty interpretationally in how we should understand the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. I think there's no solid basis for it at the moment in terms of how it acts on classical symmetries. It either is like a normal constraint, and then it's effectively leading us to this dynamically trivial theory, or it's unfounded. Answer? Interpretation of the Hamiltonian function as a Hamiltonian constraint as a normal constraint in terms of generating pure gauge symmetries doesn't seem to stack up to either the explicit calculation that Tiermans I put up, or if you look at Jacobi's theory, it's clearly giving you dynamics, it's clearly taking you between points. So I'm skeptical of this direct presumption, definitely. And I think the fact is that his working is only really if you've got a preferred time. So for theories like GR or Jacobi's theory or Bartolotti theory, all it is Dirac's kind of presumption. It's not a full weight. But then, on the other hand, I think there's a degree to which treating the Hamiltonian constraint in GR as purely generic dynamics is also problematic. So, I think...
So, maybe I can provide one comment. So you raised the question, what is actually happening when you impose constraints as operator conditions on states? So, one of the things I don't know really what's going on. It's just parameterized Newtonian mechanics or Newtonian mechanics on extended configuration space. When you do the Dirac procedure there, you do get the right results with some fudging and redefining inner products and so on.
Yeah.
But what is exactly going on there? I'm not sure.
So I think it would be interesting to see in terms of this geometric way of root, what exactly in parameterized particle dynamics it means to make this reduction. So whether what we're actually doing is just choosing a preferred time and then quantizing, I'm not sure. But yeah, I'd have to look at the extent to which parameterized particle